I'm Susan Grant.
And we are Bell Street,
who are an events band and production company.
And we're here to talk to you about our fun and failures
of our journey from being scared to doing it anyway.
And today we have a fantastic guest for you. We managed to snatch her up while she was passing through Dorset.
So we have Bryony Perdue, who is entertainer, singer, producer, all wonderful things. Brilliant creative, and we cannot wait to have a chat with her.
Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to our podcast today. We are very excited to have our guest, Bryony Perdue, with us, who is singer, songwriter, producer, extraordinaire, I'm going
to
put.
Yeah, I was thinking we need to add extraordinaire on the end.
I'll take it. I'll take it. What would be the like Bryony Perdue MD, but it'd be EX, extraordinaire.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
Start not putting X. That at the end of your name.
I like it.
We should start, we could put that at the end of ours as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Extraordinaire, Bell Street extraordinaire.
Yes.
Anyway, very welcome to you, Bryony. It's lovely to have you with us today. And we're going to find out a little bit about you and what makes you just do it anyway throughout your life.
Kind of been my policy the whole time.
So maybe if we start off, obviously we know who you are, but people who are listening, tell them a bit about what you do, where you're based, a brief synopsis.
Keeping it brief is tricky because we are in a gig economy, and not just music gigs, but there's lots that being a now full-time creative encompasses. So there have been many routes to get here. I'm based in southeast London now. I grew up in Scotland, and then my parents moved down to Dorset. And I had a wonderful singing teacher at school when we moved down who took me under her wing and really brought out this sort of confidence in singing myself musically and brought out this voice. So I want to be a singer. Great. You need to go and get a real degree before you do that. Very sensible, because I'd done well at school. My parents suggested that. And I lasted a year of my real degree.
Okay.
Before coming
in
out.
In what?
In French and Italian.
Okay.
So that then fed into coming back home, working for it. Hello, darling. There's the dog.
Nelly strikes again.
Nelly strikes again. Coming away from uni, having studied a year of French and Italian. And by a year, I mean I did like two lectures and went, this is not for me, I'm out. Partied, had a great time. Came home. Retrained with aforementioned singing teacher who took me, you know, I saw her a lot, and then got auditioned for music college, got in, moved up to London. Haven't really looked back. And it's the environment there that kind of cultivated. I'd been in a band here with some guys, the Moonlight Six.
I saw you a very long time ago.
They were so
on
brilliant.
New Year's Eve. It was
I
brilliant.
Have to say, I'm very, very lucky to have had the, I would say men, like the musicians in my life, but the men in my life, because they've been incredibly supportive. And like, I'm a 18, 19 year old who's got a lot of potential, and that can easily be either quashed or turned in a weird direction, and all these guys have just been incredibly generous and paternal and brotherly with it, and it's been very, very formative. I have that now again with the band I work with regularly in London. So singer, producer meaning arranger of events and cabaret and circus, and the singing thing, you know, I did the 4 years at music college and realised opera wasn't for me. What is cabaret? Yes, shiny. And have been doing that for 6 years.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And it's not linear.
No.
And honestly, this podcast and talking about how you do it and how you get there is just not one way.
No.
And it's so annoying. Because for goodness sake, let's find the formula.
Let's find the roadmap. And what do we do? Tick these boxes, and then
yep,
that will be your job.
And there just isn't that. And the I'm going to do it anyway thing really is. It's something that my mum has actually always said, is I've just kept going. I just pushed doors. And it's really not an act of bravery. It's just an act of bloody-mindedness. I just really want to do this.
Yeah.
And I have worked in finance, in HR, and I, you know, all these things to support myself, and I've been lucky to have those things and the skills to allow me to support myself whilst living in London. Because finding your feet when you graduate and being told if you want to be an opera singer, your voice isn't going to mature for 10 years. You're like, great,
yeah.
How do I live for 10 years?
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, having worked in all those other things and gone, I've been offered a full-time job, and this is not a blowing my own trumpet thing, in every corporate scenario I've been in.
Yeah.
And gone, oh, steadiness, holiday.
Yeah.
No. It's not tempting to me at all.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, and I think that's... I think, again, that's a credit to my parents and the people who have been around me as I've come up through this, who have been really encouraging about it and just gone, you know, I don't think they're delusional. I think I'm really good at what I do. I have a lot of personal worries. I'm like, oh, am I a good enough friend? Do I see my friends enough? Professionally, I'm like, nah, I'm really good at what I do. I'm fine.
Yeah.
So
that's brilliant. That's an excellent attitude as well. And it would be nice for people to feel that.
Yeah.
More, well, instead of worrying.
Or a really good worry phrase I heard the other day, sorry to cut across, this is just brilliant. Worrying is like worshipping the problem.
Oh, giving it power.
Yeah. I was like, great, I'm not worrying anymore. I'm done. I'm out. I ain't worshipping that.
So what did you do to kind of throw yourself into it?
Definitely a bit of everything. And one of my not skills is remembering how things happen. I'm really bad at it because it's all such a jumble. So music college is a great place to meet musicians, obviously, and they are at your age and your stage, but also there are your lecturers. Now, this is something which I would really say is useful, and potentially a tick that, do that. If anyone does go and study music, befriend your lecturers, because much as it is wonderful to be friends with your friends, who are going to be the people you're going to be diehard pals with. I mean, I've still got my most solid friends are still from music college.
Yeah.
Because they were the first people I'd met who were the same kind of weird. And that was magical. But the lecturers are the ones that can get you jobs. So just... And I didn't do that. So I would say, like, that's a really good piece of advice. What did I do? I worked in a number of pubs whilst I was studying. And pubs have been where I've met people, where things have happened. It does help that I'm chatty. Bordering on annoying. And so working in a pub in Greenwich where I was studying, I was like, can I please put on a band, on a group, you know, I think it was Paddy's Day. So what we did is we learned a bunch of folk music because I knew a bunch of Scottish folk having grown up there, but I didn't know much Irish folk. So we did a series of rehearsals because we have rehearsal rooms at music college.
Yeah.
We all wanted to do something that wasn't our usual classical. You know, it's quite exhausting to just go in and practice and practice and practice. So we were like, let's do something that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
We made arrangements of stuff that we wanted to do that was very much, that's not one of my greatest skills. I can sort of sing out what I want everyone else to do, but I can't go and notate it or make it make sense to other people. My theory is in there somewhere, but it's not something I use super readily. I just go, this is how it should feel. Sing this, do this. And the guys were much better at putting it into actual words. And then got a couple of gigs, and through that kept getting more gigs. And then, whilst auditioning, I got an acting agent, which is infuriating because you can't get on Spotlight, which is the acting directory, until you have acting work. But you can't get acting work until you're on Spotlight. And I really did do my head in about this because I was like, I don't think they realise what they're missing. But I have no way of showing them this. And it was... someone finally took a chance on me.
Yeah.
And I also, and I do recommend this, if you've got any amateur production, anything, you need 3 or 4 credits, I think, to start on Spotlight, put them down and say it was professional. Get on there.
Yeah.
Everyone else has to do the same because it is entirely chicken and egg. I didn't know that.
I remember doing that with my CV.
Yeah. And just, I am saying lie.
Yeah.
Because you've done it. And I'm saying do it, like you, but you're not lying. You're just used to being apologetic for it not being exactly what they're asking for. Just be like, yes, I did actually spend 3 months in rehearsals and then do a free production.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say free.
Yeah.
You spent 3 months of your life doing that. Like, it's absolutely a credit. So just put it all down. Do not worry about it. And the police, who's going to come?
Yeah.
Like, come on. Seriously, what's going to happen? And then you might just get in the door. And... and then that things then start, you sort of plant one seed somewhere. And this is the very annoying thing, is you can feel really crap on a Thursday and the Friday morning you get a call and it changes, you know, your next 3 months and that's what you're doing. And that can then change your life. I don't think ahead particularly, because it's a very quick way to drive yourself mad. I tend to go, right, this is what I do have at the moment. I've got a few things booked in. And then be prepared to be agile. Like, something does come in and means you have to get the next 4 gigs covered or go away. I got offered a thing in Australia and really thought about it for 6 months this year. Mm. I would have been away now. And it was well paid, and I could have seen one of my best mates and spent some time there. I could have travelled. I really want to do that. But it really didn't, in the bigger scheme of my life, fit in. And yeah. saying
and
no.
Podcast, so
and there's this
yeah.
podcast. This wouldn't have happened. I'm exactly where I'm meant to be.
Yeah,
I am. The decision making is like, oh. And no, biggest piece of advice, don't just say yes to everything. Mm. If it doesn't feel right to you, there is a reason. It might not become apparent why. Mm. But there is a reason, and just don't do absolutely everything. And I did a lot. You know, I've done a lot. I've done random extras on an advert. I've done a couple of no-budget films, and I was even sacked from one for asking for COVID regulations. And it wasn't because of COVID. It was because the lead wanted to snog without it being put in the script. Mm. And I was like, it is at a time of COVID. That was the only diplomatic way to say, what?
Mm. Yeah.
That's actually really not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I got sacked from that for... being fair. You do have to say, I guess you do say yes when you're younger, but it's really nice and satisfying when you feel that you can just go, nah, that one's not for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that comes with confidence? Do you think that comes with age? Do you
age,
think that comes with
annoyingly I think mm-hmm. I think experience
mm-hmm. and knowing your sorry knowing your own worth and your
yeah.
we talk about it a lot, authenticity.
Mm.
Because as a duo we do say no
yeah.
to gigs if we really think it's just not going to suit us.
Yeah, yeah. And it would then let down a client.
Yeah.
It doesn't do the brand any help down the line. If you go and say yes to something and then it ends up being a really gig,
mm-hmm.
then it doesn't make anyone feel good or look good
mm-hmm.
down the line. I think that the experience and having a partnership thing is immense. I have this cabaret production business with my business partner, Emma, and I have two friends who are currently setting up businesses solo. And I don't know how you do it. My mother did it. My dad did it. I don't know how they did it without someone, A, to be accountable to, and B, to go, this is fucking miserable. How are you doing? Like, well,
yeah.
Do you want to take the emails today? Because I don't. Like, how, like, it's sharing that is,
yeah.
sharing the load is really a top tip. And it's really hard if you're an independent artist. So my stuff, I am solo, but I've taken a lot of what I've learned from being in a team into mm. that. And also sort of speak like I'm my own agent when I'm speaking about it, because it's less cringe.
Yes, yeah.
Like, I'm really good at singing. It sounds really bad compared to... Actually, as a really established artist who's actually had radio play, I've got 23,000 plays on my EP, that sounds great. I'd go and listen to that. I wouldn't listen to I'm Good Honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's we are fundamentally programmed to community, and I think communitying is a really big part of this. That's why this makes sense. Just do it anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
And like you were saying about working in corporate and pubs and befriending lecturers and that is a huge part. The networking
massively
is a huge part, and it you find the strangest situations when you are just talking to someone random, whether it's been a creative industry or not. But it's just so important, as we know before being Bell Street, but certainly last year, reaching out and working with people that just don't really have anything to do with our line of work.
Mm.
And seeing what you can do, because collaboration.
And people go, wow, you do what?
Yeah.
People love it. Like singing... Mm. Singing is an immense act of generosity. It's an immense act of joy. And people go, oh, I've never met anyone who doesn't go, I wish I could do that. I wish I could sing.
Mm-hmm.
If they, and actually, I do believe, and I'm not being cliche, I do believe everyone can sing.
Yes.
Obviously, there is a degree of talent in certain people. Obviously, it's actually the physics of how your cheekbones resonate. There is a lot to do with whether or not it sounds excellent or not. But everyone can sing. If you can speak, you can sing. It's about your vocal cords meeting. And you can You can like just enjoy that for yourself. Mm. It doesn't have to be an outward thing. I think what they often mean is not just be able to sing, but to have the confidence to conduct themselves like that.
So we have a lot of tension between things we want to be doing, things we want to be making, writing, performing, and things that we need to do to make sure we're earning some money. Mm-hmm. How do you find the tension between that, the balance between creativity as a lovely thing that mm-hmm. you're creating and creativity as like your job is a creative?
This is kind of the crux of the once you get to doing it bit. So the how do you get there is mad and meandering and can be done any which way, but some things have been sort of said and potentially helpful. That there are different parts of the brain, and for me the production side, so as well as the producing events, and that takes a lot of organisation and spreadsheets and marketing. Mm-hmm. And those are things which I am not naturally good at. I am very good at being the networking thing, at rocking up and making connections. Yeah. But I've learned an enormous amount from Emma, my business partner, because she is a marketing weapon. She's incredible. So I've learned a lot from her. That part of the brain it's a completely separate reward system. It's a completely separate other pinball ding ding mm-hmm. than the creating thing. And I'm not someone who, when it comes to creating, I don't sit down and go, Tuesday is my day for writing, for making a song. I tend to have an idea, make a voice note, or write down a lyric, and then have inspiration moments, which I then build a bit more around that. And working with a band is very useful as well, because I can then get in a room with them, go, I've had this idea, maybe hum them the voice note, show them the voice note, hum it, say the words, and then they can create something and we build something together. Now that is an absolute gift, because how do you get a band? I'm very lucky. Mm-hmm. That is an insane resource and I'm grateful for it all the time, and I miss them a lot at the moment, because I've said to you guys, but podcast-wise, for the last 15 years, I've had a cyst on my vocal folds and I had surgery 3 weeks ago. So I'm not singing at the moment. I'm actually all right about it, but I was expecting to have a nervous breakdown. And I sound fine to speak, but I'm not allowed to sing until February. And having tried little bits here and there, it's exciting what I think may be possible. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like an electrical fault, because it won't move properly yet, because the muscles have been dealing with this problem for 16 years, 15 years. Yeah. And now I'm having to train them with speech and language therapy to relax, and therefore they are kind of glitching. It's really, I can feel them like glitching weirdly.
Wow.
So the creating thing is so much easier because I've got this resource of this band. The work thing and keeping creative work and creating, they just don't land in the same box of knitting wool in my head. Colourful, I heard this thing, mum said this thing. Women have got boxes of wool and the wool's going all between the boxes in your brain. I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. They are separate boxes to me.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I'm lucky, or maybe I just had a word. I think I had a word with myself going, I'm just going to have to find a way to enjoy this. Mm-hmm. And now I do.
Yeah.
And I am flighty and hyperactive and creative and mad. And to have to sit down, and this morning did 2 hours of marketing and approaching female-led investment and business groups and members clubs, because that's the sort of audience we want at our gigs, and we'll give you a free ticket every 10 tickets you buy.
Yeah.
That's another marketing thing. Mm. Don't give people 10%. Say if you bring 10 people, you'll get one ticket free, because then they have to bring 10 people.
Okay.
Yeah?
Got it.
I only learned this from Emma like last week. I was like, that's genius. Brilliant. It's really good. I think that answered the question, Joni.
Yeah.
So, just back to your surgery, if you don't mind talking about it. Do you think the voice will be very different? I mean, have they said anything about...
So the reason I got this done, and I could have just left it, because I've obviously managed to have a career whilst this has been a problem, is because between middle C, the A and the C sharp above middle C, I couldn't consistently make a noise. And if I could, it would occasionally just stop.
Okay.
And that, to me, mechanically makes a lot of sense, that there is a little cyst at a certain point, and that point, when it's contracted, is exactly where those notes are.
Yeah.
So my vocal quality is very much the same as you've always known it. It's not changed from having this surgery. left a voice note with one of my the people who books me for a gig I do. And he went, oh, you still sound like you. I replaced to my voice. Like, I'm not coming out Tom Waits or something.
I like that.
Which I like. Also, I was relieved as well. And it's funny because my laugh's a bit different. Actually, I'm not trying not to vocalise laughing because it can be a bit punchy for the chords whilst they're healing. But I got the giggles yesterday with my husband, and it was a completely different sound. It was like higher because I've not used my voice as much, so it's a bit more relaxed, a bit girlish. It was really weird. I was like, that's not normal. Surgery, how is that going to affect it? I hope it gives me complete consistency all up and down the range.
Yeah,
that just means I can choose how to express myself. Mm-hmm. And I like that in the vocal box there are lots of different ways that you can do things, you know, like you can go for a bit more of a raspy sound, a bit more of a belty sound, quiet, loud, whatever. I hope that I can experiment with all that across the whole range now. Mm-hmm. Whereas before it was really good here, really good there, bit of an issue. So
must have been scary though.
Oh my gosh, two nights before scary. I was like, no one in the world. And then put my big girl pants on. Yeah. And also, I really reached the point with, because it's been so long and it has been a problem. And it's very interesting talking to other people who I work with going, yeah, you see, I've never noticed that problem, but you obviously do. And yeah. I'm like, yes, I really do. Because also my voice gets really tired. I lost my voice completely for 3 months. I was partying my tits off, but I know what it is to not have it. And I know how much I rely on it for my sense of self.
Yeah.
And actually, we all do, not just professional voice users.
Yeah.
And I don't think we realise that until a problem happens. The surgeon that I had was amazing. I'm so lucky that I got him on the NHS just because of where I live. Mad lucky. He's one of two that people fly over from the States to see privately.
Wow.
Like, he's amazing. Shout out Dr. Nick Gibbons. And his team are also professional voice user specialists. So I've got an amazing vocal rehab person whose name is Rehab. Her name is Rehab. She's called Rehab Awad. That's nominative predetermination amazing. There. I think amazing. She got into that for a reason. She's amazing. And then a singing rehab specialist. And I'll be very interested. I'm getting a vocal massage. You might not have encountered these. They're horrific and brilliant.
You're right.
So you've got like 17 muscles at the root of your tongue. You've got all your jaw tension. This is stuff which they go really hard in at you when you're at music college because they're like, it's a very fine instrument. Actually, we are very resilient. Mm. Can we stop giving people complexes where they don't have any?
Yeah.
Can we just be like, it's fine unless it isn't, and then introduce this discussion? So there are all these muscles here, and what a vocal massage person will do is massage around your neck, and then occasionally they'll put on medical gloves and go into your cheek and like push this muscle here, and you're like, I didn't realise that you could reach my soul from there, but you just did. And then you come out and you go, absolutely amazing. And then you sing and your larynx is where it's meant to be. And like, it's something I think that you should... research who's local.
Yeah.
Or come up to London, stay, and then get one.
Yeah.
Because it's just fascinating what tensions you learn about. Mm-hmm. And then you can do those by just doing different exercises. You know, you can manage that coming back again. But I've got a couple of those in, and I'll be interested because I am aware from the rehab that the speech and language therapy, that I have a lot of problems on this side. My muscles here are like really overactive because they've been trying to protect my vocal cord from smacking against itself too hard with this cyst. And that can then cause damage on the other side, which can cause a nodule, which are like singers' most feared thing, because a nodule is a damaged thing. So the only way to recover from that is weeks of rest. And that means your whole career stops. I'm lucky with this because I have the work from home I can do with a refugee choir I produce for, the cabaret production company. And my band carries on and they are still writing, so I'm coming back into stuff. And I've also finished mastering my debut album whilst I've been recovering.
Ooh,
so
we can talk about that.
There's plenty you can do. I very much last year looked at my life and went, I only earn from performing. That's not healthy. I would like to start a family at some point. How do I do that if all I can do is be in the place doing the thing?
Yeah.
And it's exhausting.
Yeah.
5 nights a week of gigging is too many. And I'm very lucky that that was a point I was at. But it's not healthy. And it's obviously not good for this. It puts you back as well. So I know West End performers do that, but that is different because you do get the map of the show. But what I do is like cabaret one night with full belt and a bit of chatting on a microphone, then jazz, than two songs of classical. You know, it's not this. You can't get in the same rhythm of training your muscles to do it in the same way.
Yeah, and different environments as well. Because if you're out having to sing over people, as well.
You're so right. Yeah. So it's been good, and the album has been 2 years in the making.
I was going to say, because I'm sure I've seen a long journey
I'm
of
this. I'm sure we were all different ages when I started this. Were we not in the noughties?
I've been 35 for a while.
Yeah, good. I think that's where everyone should stop. I think that's just
what Oscar Wilde says.
Absolutely, 35 plus some experience. The album is fascinating because So producer terms, you can either be a producer like theatre producer, which is what that word means when I'm talking about the cabaret and the choir, because I get people in places doing things. Or producing, which is the music side of things, where you are the person that twists the knobs and makes the decisions on how a track sounds. I want the violins louder, I want the drums quiet, whatever it is. It's normally the way around. And I had 5 days in January 2023, where 3 days with the band, recording 11, 12 tracks, then a day of vocals for me to lay down a guide vocal, just so we had a map to go from. And I had sung all of those 3 days from 8 till 7 p.m. Every single take we did, I sang so the guys could get a feel and we were a band together. So that's, how much singing is that? That's insane. That's a lot. 10 hours of singing. Then strings on the Friday morning and then some more percussion on the Friday afternoon. Why has it taken 2 years? Because I had a producer who is going to help with it, who does a beautiful job on what he does, but I had to, if I was going to release it then, I had a timeline. There was a massive misunderstanding about my budget, and that's really uncomfortable because I felt I'd been really clear, but it doesn't matter whether you feel you've been clear or not if it's been misunderstood. And I said, well, I can't therefore do this, and he went, no, I will, but then that meant he wasn't going to do it in time. Right. I got a version back and it was beautiful, but it wasn't what I felt I wanted from it. So I sacked that person, which is also, that's a bit scary.
Yeah, big girl pants to sack people.
And paid him for the time that he'd spent.
Yeah.
And I've spent 2 years with the amazing sound engineer and we've co-produced it. So I've gone into the studio and and when you are producing something and you have all the equipment in one place and you are the person doing there, holding it all and doing that all on one project, because that's what you've been paid to do, you can do that in 2 weeks. But 2 weeks of stolen afternoons is 2 years. So again, there's no one route to that. And I'm thrilled it's taken 2 years, because about a year ago, I was really pissed off. I was like, why isn't this done yet? I'm ready for this to be out now. Come on. And then in the last year, I have worked at the amazing pub, the Devonshire, on Piccadilly. And my wonderful friend Oisin is the landlord there, and Charlie and Ash, who co-own that with him. And there's music there, and I book it. And through that room, I've not only been incredibly inspired and made different decisions musically on how we're going to treat the album and make it a bit more raw and a bit less polished.
Right.
Which I like. I like being able to sort of hear the hands on the strings and not, you know, I don't want to sterilise it. But also I've met music industry people who, sending an email is a very different thing to going, hi, we know each other, would you have a listen to this and recommend where it might be able to go? Have you got any friends in A&R, artist and registration at Sony or whatever? You know, and these are, I am aiming big, why not? Because as my English teacher at school had, if you aim for the sun, even if you miss, you'll land amongst the stars. You know, I like that one. So it's mega, it's so beautiful. And I art directed the shoot for the album artwork. I just had a really clear idea of what I wanted, having not had much creative control over my previous recordings. And the guys who are in the band, they gave their time as a gift to this, because they are these brother father people. They're amazing people. I'd say more brothers than dads, they're too young. But there's something incredibly caring and nurturing about them, that they've all then gone, you know, well, your success benefits us as well. You know, if you do really well, we'll contribute to you. Because with them, I'm in a band with them. We do 2 nights a week at a beautiful venue in central London. And we are called Summer, as in Somerset, S-O-M-E-R.
Nice.
And when that album, because we're writing together as well, when that comes through, if mine's released and doing well, then we've already got a marketing platform. So that, you know, I don't know how that works, but yeah, it's a nice idea.
Yeah.
You know, and also the imagination thing, because there is no formulaic way of doing it, you just have to imagine. And I'm immensely optimistic. Like, I really do. I don't necessarily want to be a household name. I would quite like the degree of anonymity that I have, because I can just wander around doing what I want to do and not be harassed. But I do want to be able to tour and share this music, because this particular music actually does really mean something. Every, you know, all the words and everything in it has been from a personal experience.
Yeah.
And I do think we'll resonate with other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not navel gazing. I think it's about being in your 20s and assault and all those things and getting over those things through music. And mm-hmm. I think drawing out that poison for me might just draw out that poison for the people.
Mm-hmm.
So I am more than happy to imagine and want this to be big enough to make a living for my friends on tour with me, and
yeah.
that'd be the thing.
Yeah,
that's what I want. I want this world to make a few, yeah. hundred, a few, you know, a couple hundred quid a gig,
mm-hmm.
maybe more, and not want for other work,
mm-hmm.
but be doing what we like.
Yes,
that's the model.
Yeah.
I was told to think of a number, like an annual income, that would be enough,
right,
to do this, and I said it to the person that asked me, and they went, that's really not very much.
Right.
And I was like, right, so what would you say? And they like trebled it. And they went, that's what I thought the starting level was. And I was like, right, okay. Is that a you problem or a me problem?
Yeah. Okay.
Or a misconception? What's happened there? And they've gone, well, I think things probably cost more than you think they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, actually, maybe, but I am very good at negotiating. So I'm not sure they do. And also, there's a lot to be said for being nice to work with. Like, I do anything I've ever been on, and I'm not pretending I'm some big famous person. I'm not. I'm just working. I'm working in it. I'm a full-time creative, and that is amazing. And like, that is a success to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always known the security guard's name. I've always known the new bar staff's name,
mm-hmm.
because this doesn't work without everyone in it.
Yeah.
And I think you guys are really good at that, because also we've all worked in everything ever
yeah.
to try and just make ends meet and pay mortgage. And the cabaret thing is not yet earning us enough money to be a viable business, but we are getting there.
Mm.
And part of that is putting together a business plan. What does that mean? I don't know. I'm learning. You know,
yeah,
like
us too.
Right. So yeah. I'm doing that on Wednesday. I'm having a second meeting with a business partner and a friend who's a sort of becoming our business coach. Because what do I present to someone to want to invest in us? Because we need some capital.
Yeah.
That we can then see we can get them that capital back, because yes. that's the leapfrog, that you're like, oh, I can sell the shit out of this and you should give us this much money and it's going to be great. When am I getting that back? Nah, don't worry about it. Nah, it's not going to happen. That's yeah. not, no one's going to do that.
Yeah.
But we, yeah, I think that can be fun, and I think the having a duo to do that in is how to yeah. keep that not just scary.
You didn't say what your album's called and when it's coming out.
So, well, it's currently with a couple of managers. It's called Drip Feed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole premise is that over the last, it's got stuff from like the last 15 years in it and on it. And the overarching thing, that the title track Drip Feed is kind of like the down the rabbit hole-ness of the world that we live in and trying to find your way, I suppose, is the sort of overarching theme of that first track. And then the rest of it is specific experiences put into tracks. So mm-hmm. one of them is New Year's Eve in Edinburgh. One of them is flipping the sides of an assault. One, you know, there is a really very direct... And I didn't write them like that. They just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've gone, oh my gosh, that was absolutely the bomb for that. That was
yeah.
absolutely a celebration of that. And there's a lovely one called Home, which is all about having found my home in my husband. And...
Mm-hmm.
I was so ready for my summer of singleness.
Oh.
9 years ago. I met him the next day. I was like, you're really good. Can you wait 2 years? No, I didn't say that. No. He was just very good. So I've been very lucky there. And also, I will say, I would not be able to do anything that I'm doing without the sacrifice that he's made. Because
right.
he was an actor. He is no longer an actor. That is his story to tell. And he works in a software company and doesn't love it. And he stays in that because he's working out what he does want to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's 10 years older than me as well, so he's having a bit of like a, I want to positively impact the world moment. And the sacrifices that he's made that allow me to do this are also not unnoticed, and an immense position of privilege to be able to to lean on him like that. I mean, you know, I look forward to being able to reciprocate with other things, you know.
That's fine.
Doesn't go unnoticed.
Pause of appreciation.
Pause of appreciation.
What's the name of your business?
Crowd Pleaser.
Yes, that's it. When did you start it?
The summer before, so 2023 summer. We sat in Golden Square in central Soho and had an ice lolly and went, yeah, so you've got this black book of contacts, so do I. You want to pay people fairly and on time, so do I. You want to advocate for equality and diversity across the industry, so do I. Why don't we do this? And so we have. And we thought, I think we had another name idea, I can't even remember what it was, but no one had Crowd Pleaser in the UK. There's one in Australia.
Wow.
And we were like,
that's a really good name.
Dumb dumb heads. Thank you very much.
So obviously locality for you has been really important,
mm-hmm.
Moving to London. We struggle because of our location sometimes, don't we? Because you, in terms of like everything takes longer, doesn't it? Because you've got to get to places and then so that's more time out for you and stuff like that. I just thought there's lots of people who listen to this from all over the place. Lots of people.
Millions.
Hundreds and thousands.
By the time this comes out, they bloody will.
Have you got any advice for people who aren't like in a metropolis?
I have really strong thoughts and really strong feelings about this, because I don't always want to be in London.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can be as big a fish as you like in a big pond, but if you are a big fish in a small pond, you've potentially got more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, think London, be local. I don't think you have to move, but I think you have to have that kind of contact every national trust property in the vicinity and go, what are you doing for May Day? What are you doing for Valentine's Day? What are you doing for these events throughout the year? We are the perfect person for you for two reasons. One, we're brilliant. And two, there's only two of us, so we'll keep your costs down.
Yeah.
We are not a seven-person band. Mm. Contact all your local pubs and venues that do festivals. You've got the lovely Shaftesbury Arts Festival here. I know that you're already linked up with that.
Mm.
But that only happens once a year.
Mm-hmm.
So have, like, get a diary out. Get one of those A3 diaries and write throughout the year, on an average year, without knowing where things are happening. Just go, right, so Valentine's Day always happens 14th of Feb. What happens in January? We recoup and get damage from, what's it called, tax bills. We cry. January, we plant seeds.
Yes, we do.
February, there's going to be Valentine's Day. March, you're getting into spring things, so there might be spring events at National Trust properties, like I'm saying, and it might be really lovely to have like a little two 20-minute sets as kids are starting their Easter egg hunts. That'd be a lovely thing to do. And this is also something I learned from Emma, from her approach to things. The online world to me is so vast and so frightening, and I can so easily feel so small I want to put the duvet over my head and stop.
Yeah.
When I think about online. Mm-hmm. I've actually got some marketing I need to do today and I've just put it off because I hate it. But once it's done, like I just need to do it. But the in-person thing, you're brilliant at. Like it's what we, I think, are, is a real strength of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly how I've always got work. I mean, reaching out via email or direct recommendation, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But via email, I'm not sure I've ever got work. Or if I have, it's been, I've sent you an email 2 years ago and now you know someone I know and they recommended me. And now they'll read my email.
Okay.
So either getting on a phone or going in person so they can get a sense of who you are. And having that, oh God, waiting for the phone to ring and then pick up and being like, what was I going to say? Classic. Have a first couple of sentences like in your head.
Susan is the phone caller.
Good. Gorgeous speaking voice.
If we have to do a phone call, I will write anything you like, but if it's a phone call, I'm like, Susan, can you speak?
I'm paralysed, I can't do it.
Yeah, she's so good.
That's there you go. So delegate. That's your powerhouse skill. That's your mega skill. One of. The local thing and not being local, I mean, I grew up in Edinburgh, which is another metropolis, but it does not have the same size or scale of scene as London. And I do very regularly think, you know, is that the perfect place to live? Is it a really good place to live for what I do? Because all through the year, there is a scene. Mm. And I do think to a certain degree, it would be naive to say that if you want to be a cabaret artist that's, you know, really well recognised, at some point you're probably going to have to move into one of the bigger cities like Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't think Portsmouth has a particularly big scene. But, you know, like you have to move to somewhere where that is, you're then in the running with the people who are in the running.
Yeah.
But I don't think it needs to be that restrictive to make a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that we're also really prone to over-glamorising. It's a lot of hard work. And a gig at a National Trust property, that to me sounds absolutely idyllic. Like, I would love that. That is something I'd be really excited about. I wouldn't think of that as small.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't think of that as parochial and local and little.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, that's a date in my diary. I'm thrilled about that. And I do random little, you know, bar gigs and things still, because I want to, and they're nice gigs, and I get as excited about them. And I always deliver. I can't help it. I've had some things where I'm like, I've got a big gig in 2 days. I must go gentle on this one. And I can't. I get into it, I'm like, I'm at the Albert Hall. I'm off. I mean, mentally, you know. I'm off. And that also does two lovely things, which is everyone, if it is a smaller gig, everyone feels really special because you're not giving them less. You feel really, really good. You're then more, you never know who's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You never know who's in the audience, and someone might just come up to you afterwards, and this has happened at a small gig, and going, oh, I'm a multimillionaire, and I'm going to fly you to Zurich, and you're going to sing at my son's wedding. You're like, great.
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am. Let's do that. And it's, I think, just really, really doing it entirely based on your own integrity and what it is that you want from a situation means that people get the best from you.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking small is not making yourself small. Thinking local is not thinking small.
Yeah.
Just coming up with loads of like tea towel quotes.
Yeah, you could do sound bites. Well, we like a title.
Yeah.
Tea towel quotes. Can we call that one? Tea towel quotes.
We want to start a calendar of our title quote month.
Amazing.
So. Motivational calendar. Amazing. Shouting things at you from the corner of your kitchen.
Excellent. Telephone voice Susan.
But it, like you're saying, going in and making yourself seen, so that, because that physical contact with somebody, you immediately, we've done it a few times, but you immediately know whether you get
you,
a vibe
you
from
align
someone,
or
the venue or whatever, and you work out very quickly who doesn't mean what they say as well when you're trying to get across what you
That's
do.
That's really hard because I'm fundamentally a bumbling child and I want everyone to just be lovely.
But why is it so frightening to go and approach somebody? Because I have to have chats with myself sometimes, especially when it comes to admin and paperwork that I am not very good at. Mm. We're learning about spreadsheets, but I think it's just a person, isn't it? That I've got to talk to or deal with. It's just another person.
Yeah.
Well, can I ask you a question in response to that, which is what are you afraid is going to happen?
Well, depending on, I think probably is that I'm going to be wrong, or I'm going to be made to look stupid, or they're going to say no, or there's something very childlike of being told off or something. I don't know, not knowing all the information. But then I think, well,
so I think bumbling in almost alter ego character childlike is a really good thing to do. And strangely, you are going in expecting something, but don't go in with an active expectation. So don't go in going, I'm expecting to get a gig out of this. Like, the conversations I've had, long game is not something I'm great at. I can't go, I'm going to keep this cool, I'm going to let this slow burn just here. I can't really do that. I go like, don't suppose you've got any room in your books and you're one of the Sony A&R people. And they might go, oh, people don't really ask that. I go, cool. So like, even though I'm asking a very direct question and having a tangible as well, not going at some point, we're like, we have two dates available, one of which is Valentine's, one of which is Easter. Have you got a trailer? You know, that I'm just focusing on this National Trust thing for some reason.
Don't worry, we will. We'll do it.
We promise. I don't know why, but as a sort of case study, as an example. But that's a very direct ask. Because if you go in going, it might be nice to do a sing.
Yeah.
It's like... How does someone who's got a million other moving parts fit that into their mental schedule?
Yeah.
you go, right, here are two dates, and have that information very near the beginning of conversation if you're going in to ask that, or if you're just having a conversation, something comes up where you realise someone might be someone that can give you a gig, you know, you've got it there if you need to bring it out. Say it, and then if it doesn't come off, really, no one died?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, this is my my favourite phrase is, well, no one died.
Yeah, that's what Alice says, isn't it, mm-hmm. on our podcast season one. She says that no one is going to die. Yeah. I mean, depending what you're doing, but usually no one is going to die.
Yeah. Going into a situation where you're asking for a gig, very unlikely.
Yes.
Very unlikely.
That would have to be an extreme reaction.
Quite an extreme reaction. So yeah, I think that as well. The stakes are, we have all, every single person, we three have lived through stuff which is big and heavy. And that makes us amazing artists, and it will make us continue to want to push for and be motivated to make other people have lovely experiences.
Mm.
And if you have that behind you when you're going in to ask directly, we're going to enhance your event, then it doesn't come off. No harm, no foul. No one's been hurt by that.
Yeah.
It's only enhanced. You've done another one. You've ticked off another one of those uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah.
You've gone in and done it.
Yeah. We're doing that really about asking people to be on the podcast.
Right.
Like, trying to get a little bit braver every time.
This was a quick turnaround. We've nailed this.
I know. Yeah. You were on our scary list as well.
You were on our scary list, yeah.
I am utterly terrifying.
Well, we have a scarier list. But you were on the scary list, and then
that's really
list.
I love that. Also, Emma and I have a well done tally where we have a spreadsheet where if either one of us says well done to the other, we fill in a block that's green, and it's per month. So like that month was our tally. And then we take ourselves out for lunch and stuff. Mm. You know, I mean, that's just something we do. Anyway.
Yeah, that is a good thing to do.
But I like having a well done list as well. Having a scary, and like the things that we name things, very similar. Like performer, don't want to work with, attitude, not good. Yeah, no, I'm thrilled to have been on this. Thank you so much for asking me. It's really, it's really lovely.
We were talking earlier before we started recording, but we were talking about sharing like advice and ideas. I can't remember how you phrased it, but that kind of fear that as women we have of sharing and giving pathways and advice and stuff, because success is so rare, but it's not. But it's kind of that scarcity mindset.
I think what's really annoying is that I did phrase it really well earlier. I can't remember.
I was trying to remember what you said.
That's a really good quote. Like, based on this patriarchal system, we should not be gatekeepers of other women's success, I guess. And I am completely. My business is based on being two women, me and my production company. The choir with whom I work, founded by a majority of the team, is our non-binary women.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. And the I don't see why we should be afraid of sharing what we have learned, because there is no formula.
Mm-hmm.
And why wouldn't you? At the Devonshire Where I Book Artists, we can basically get anyone in the world. We've had some insanely famous people in there. We have a Tuesday and a Sunday Irish traditional night, where every Tuesday and Sunday there is a singer called Eve, who now works at the pub as a waiter, sings. I think she has one of the most unbelievable voices I have ever heard, and it is getting better, and I don't understand that, because first time I heard it I was like, holy shit. And it's not raw material. She knows what she's doing with it. She has a heart and a head that are screwed on and big and open, and I am 8 years her senior, and trying to, without managing her, I have no interest in managing or making her smaller in any way, just gently throw in little bits of advice here and there, because I think her trajectory is going to be vastly more steep than mine. I think she's going to whoosh. But she is so easily going to get into this pool of intensity and tempest, and she might be surrounded by wonderful people,
mm-hmm.
but at the centre of that, she has to feel steady.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so hard to convey to someone without being naggy. Without, again, trying to seem like I'm gatekeeping something. I'm not saying go slower. I'm not saying go slower. I think you should go as fast as you bloody well want to. But you are also, and you cannot, and I could not be told this, mm-hmm. and no one can be, just make sure you are taking care of yourself at the heart of this. Because she's hungry, and she should be hungry, mm. and she's being effectively given the nods to go to stratospheric levels of notoriety, and she should. She has a voice that deserves that, and she writes like unbelievable lyrics and beautiful songs, so she really deserves all that could happen.
Mm.
But just try and manage that expectation with, you know, like being famous is not good. It's actually really exhausting, and the really international, super well-known people that I've met have stood at the bar and gone, when was the last time, so two of them were standing next to each other, when was the last time you bought a pub pint in a pub without being harassed? Because we had a lock-in with the staff and these two. And the other one turns around and goes, 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
I'm exhausted. And they have partners and families, and their families have occasionally been in danger, you mm-hmm. know, because of the level of fame that they have.
Yeah.
And it's just, I realise at that moment, I don't want to be famous.
Mm.
I do want to, as I said earlier, my measure of success is being able to pay for everyone to go on tour with me and have a lovely time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, gatekeeping advice and gatekeeping how you did it, it can be very cathartic for you yourself, and it can be very useful for other people to just see that there isn't one way and no one is doing it wrong.
Yeah.
If you're doing it really, like, positively and generously, you're not doing it wrong. So yeah. I think that would be my sense of it.
And if there's one thing, that's what we ask everyone, if there's one thing you could say to yourself 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember how old you are.
31, baby.
10 years ago. If you could tell your, give yourself a piece of advice, just, or, like, say something to yourself, like, 10 years ago, knowing what you know now, about your career, what would you?
That is really interesting, because immediately what came to mind is everything that has happened and how long it's all taken is exactly right for me. So, mm. And I was never, I have been impatient. I'm sure my mum can attest to that. I have been impatient at times, but I've also, I've not been ungrateful for what has happened.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna dash that question on the rocks and say, just carry on. You're doing exactly what you need to do. Exactly what you need to be.
Oh, you'd be a really frustrating apparition, mm-hmm. wouldn't you? Like, no, tell me more. Mm-hmm. You're on the right path.
You've hit a point again. Gratitude, actually, yeah. is very easy to forget, to practice the gratitude.
Because and it's practice.
There is gratitude, and to be able to feel that grateful emotion in everything, when it's really, really shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just because it keeps it positive, otherwise things can go downhill.
Or it keeps it neutral. Not everything's always positive. I happen to be quite a sunny person, but it's not all sunny all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm very lucky. I tend to be like, even if I am having a bad day, I'm still all right at the core of it.
Mm.
But we just don't know what's going to happen. I love the idea that if it doesn't get really well known or whatever, there's a legacy thing here, which I don't think women get in the same way, because babies are meant to be our legacy.
Mm.
I have made something
mm.
that will outlive me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's really good.
Yeah.
With really amazing people on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
That is.
Yeah.
And that's the same you guys have recorded. You've got these outlive you. These are amazing. These are legacy things.
Mm. Yeah.
There will always be a musical called Hugh the Musical.
Yes, there will.
Whether we want it to be on
that. Hugh, know there will.
Hugh know it. Well, thank you so much for coming
and
talking
so
to
much.
Us. You were on our scary list, and then you responded straight away like, yes, and we were like, yes.
Yeah, of course. Also, the timing was amazing.
Was
like,
it?
Well,
oh,
done.
So
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Because I'd only just decided to come down.
Yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
We can't wait to hear the album.
Yeah.
I will definitely send it as soon as it's like available for public consumption.
Yeah, okay. And come see it live. That'll be exciting.
Oh, gosh, I'm going to have a launch party. It's going to be good.
Yes, do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed that. Did you enjoy that?
Really enjoyed it. Yes. It was fantastic. It's so great to speak to women who are being successful and just going for it. And, you know, somewhere where us country bumpkins aren't. It's always fun. No, very, very inspiring. We hope that you enjoy listening to Bryony and follow her and find out what she's doing over the next few months as well.
But until then, stay flexible and just do it anyway.
That really grinds my gears, that one. Yeah. So does the term grind my gears. Sorry, I don't know how sweary you like the podcast, but that was pretty extreme. Yeah. If you are in a really horrific argument with someone, call them a poo head, and the wind going out of their sails is visible.
It takes you right back to school.
It
maybe
does, and they're like,
like, but knowing what you know now.
Did yesterday.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I loved it when that happened. That doesn't happen to me. I love it when that happens. It doesn't happen.
That's well done. Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you for that. Well done, Tally.
Yeah, I would. You've got someone who's good at spreadsheets then. Because we haven't got that yet. We're working on it.
I really do wish I could clone Emma.